As it was mentioned, I was going to talk about mostly about the Inuit people. Actually, I'm not talking for them, I'm talking with them, because this is the things that I went through with them since I've been living on and off with the Inuit people on the northern of Quebec in the region called Nunavik. The Nunavik is different from the Nunavut. The Nunavik is really the north of Quebec. It's the furthest north you can go. After that, it's in the Arctic. It's nearby the Hudson Bay. The major thing that I want to mention about the Inuit, my friends, these people been living under severe colonization, which was aggressively started in 1975. Why I say that? Because in 1975, everybody is aware of the agreement, James Bay Agreement and the North Agreement. What interests did the federal government had, or any government in Canada had, in going into the North? Because obviously, none of us can go and live in the North. It's too cold. There's no trees, no land. There's a land, but there's not much to cultivate according to our own way of doing things. So there's no industry. The only reason is because there was a lot of nickels. And we say in français cuivre, je sais pas qu'est-ce que c'est en anglais. Hein? Copper. So there's a lot of nickel and copper. And already Falconbridge and Raglan were ready to go up north. So the problem is we needed the land. We didn't care about those Inuit that were living there. They were already a problem. But the problem is now we needed that land. So we needed the people there to let us go and get their land for cheapest as possible. So Falconbridge and Raglan can live there and develop and exploit as the way they wish. So 1975 was declared the year where modernization of the Inuit people was going to start. Modernization, which means in the Inuit language, means salvation, means the development of a severe, ferocious colonization of their area. People will remember how they used the Inuit people in 1956. Even earlier than that, in 1953. At the time, it's Northern Bay that was making business with Inuit up north. Northern Bay was not having a good price for his fur that he was collecting from the Inuit people down here south. He was not making enough money around 1953. He told the federal government, listen, I know what to do with your Inuit, but I cannot pay for their fur the same price that I used to pay for them. And I'm not there to make them living, I'm there to make money. So do whatever you want, but do something. So in 1953, it was the Cold War. Everybody remember the Cold War and the possibility for the American and also the Russian people to go. They were having their submarine in the water, in the Arctic. So Canada was a bit afraid of its frontier. So what they did, they decided, oh, then we know what to do with the Inuit people. We're going to use them as a human being present up north and making sure that nobody can get there, because there's a human being and they're Canadian, so please don't get there. So they took a few peoples, a few hundreds, no care if they were families, they just split all the families, and they sent on a boat to further north, and they just dumped them there for many years, with a promise to return them back to the Nunavik. And when they send them there, the reason they use it's because there was no more food in the year to come for the Inuit in the Nunavik. They thought, well, maybe they're right. They find it a little bit funny because they didn't have problems with caribou or seals or whatsoever. But they said maybe it's a reason. So this, and anyway, they were supposed to come back 2 years later. So this was in 1953. In 1974-75, they were never allowed to come back since that time. And they were told that they can come back, but at their own expenses. And everybody knows, and I know, that going up there costs about $3,000 by plane. So they never, and many died in the further north area where the food was different, where the night was 24 hours, which is not the same in the Nunavik. We don't have the night 24 hours. And they were sent there with no materials no dog, nothing, so they couldn't live the way they used to live. So many died. The apologies was done in 1996. So when I'm going back since 1975, in 1975, when the Inuit people signed the agreement, three villages refused. Saluit, one of the biggest villages up north, the further north of Quebec, and Iwuivik, a small village just west, and Pouvumnituk, like people probably have heard. These people didn't want to sign because they were aware that their land was going to be taken and also their traditional way of living. But anyway, like you know, when they want to take over something, they do. Any state can do it because they have much more forces and a way to do it. So they establish themselves. The Canadian government, till 1976, established itself very clearly in the Nunavik, and then after that, the Nunavik was passed on to the provincial government. Then when I talk about very ferocious colonization, it's because there's not much resistance. The resistance is very hard to organize. The only way between community is by plane. The only communication is by plane. And also, the problem also, the language is mostly the Inuktitut language. Very few speak current fluent English or for sure French less. So it's very hard to have kind of communication for them to be aware of what's going on in the world, what means resisting decolonization, what means. So there's many things that are not getting there in terms of, yes, they have the right to fight for their own land. Yes, they have the right to stand up. Where they have the right to refuse certain way of doing things. Also, when I talk about colonization, I talk about the work. They say that since they are developing, since they are saying they are modernizing the North, they say that they couldn't find anybody, any Inuit people, qualified to do any kind of work up north. First of all, in the mine, nobody is born working in a mine, right? So for sure they won't do anything to make them qualified. So the few people that work in the mine that are from Inuit people, there are very few, the percentage is almost nothing. And these people, they work mainly on the maintenance. And obviously, the people from south, which I mean Montreal, Quebec, whatever, that whoever goes to the north, make a fortune, maybe like a lot more money than they will do in any mines, like Thetford mines or any mine around here, because they have the isolation premium. So obviously, they said they are not educated. There's no, it's not our fault. We cannot hire them. They have no education. Then they establish their own school, our school, our English, and then since 1976, we try to reinforce the French-speaking school, which makes things a lot harder, because if one language has been taught, spoken as a second language since till 1976 by the few older elderly people, it's a bit of English. So now they switch to the French. So the school, like in, it was the same situation in South Africa, where they were forced to speak the inside the school. They were forced to speak the language that was taught, the English or the French, but certainly not the Inuktitut at school. They were punished if they were speaking Inuktitut in their area. Even names were changed, because they were too complicated for teacher to be told, to be mentioned. So we have some names that were changed, and then family have different names because some decided to keep their name and other, they had no choice because they continue to go to school with that name, and they are registered in the government with that new name that were decided by teacher unilaterally. Also, absolutely no word nothing about the history of the Inuit, the strength of the Inuit people living through very hardship, which means like the kind of mode of living, way of living they've been going through for centuries. Absolutely nothing. Even the teacher, and nobody knows anyway what was their way of living. So it gives you an idea of how the young people know about themselves, because the problem is they're still living the same way. They're still living mainly on hunting, fishing. So how could you understand that there's nothing about their own way of living, how to build their igloo when they go into the tundra to hunt? So they not even teach anything of this, because that's not part of the modern way of learning. They are allowed to speak or to to speak and to learn Inuktitut grade 3. This is new since early 1990s, because of the impossibility of getting kids to school, because the parents were not enforcing their kids to go to school, because they didn't even understand why they were going there. They didn't understand why they were, what for, what was the reason. So to reinforce the idea of the kids to go to school, they let them learn Inuktitut grade 3. But then after grade 3, they have to go to no more Inuktitut at all. Everything is taught in French or English. So obviously, they cannot perform. And if they're sent down, they want to come back down south after grade 12, obviously they have to start from scratch. So even to tell you to make a good conclusion with that, our government decided to, in 1996, to make a study to prove that the problem with the Inuit people is that they probably are retarded, because the food that the mother is taking when she bears the children is probably contaminated. So that will explain why all the Inuit people, most of them, are retarded at school. This study was started by the government, our provincial government, Project Nord, the Minister of Health. And we were supposed, as a nurse, we were supposed to apply that project by poking the baby from birth and at different time per month to see how much of PCB or other things they had in their blood, to prove that later on they are retarded. I, with and I convinced another doctor that was in Puvuntuk at the time, this was racist start premises. So it was rejected. This was rejected. Other thing is and I think some people have heard of that, in 1994, 1995, 1996, there was Dr. Tom DeMarco that was working under the knowledge of the Association of Doctors in Quebec, because he wrote many articles in the magazine, medical magazine, about the way to reduce the growth of the population in the Inuit community, to reduce the population. One of the reasons to reduce the population, it's, you see, because the Inuit people are mostly expansive. First, they are not used for the mine. Second, they need help because now there's a project, like the project of that there's the agreement signed. The government is responsible for the health, obviously, like a Quebec citizen. They are responsible for their education. Then means for government expands. So how do we have to cut? First, cut on the population, because we cannot kill them, literally. So we try to cut on the population. So this doctor was doing his job from 94, 95, 96. He succeeded in one village, the biggest village, Salwit, to decrease the population of 75% the growth. It's 75% in 1 year. By chasing the young girl, the young women, at the age, like 13, 14, 15 years old, to forcing them, their family, their parents, to be under strong contraceptive, Depo-Provera, which was at the time not accepted, and Norplan, which required a little surgery, a little intervention, because it's a 3-4 stick that we put under the skin in the under the arm. So many had infection following this because of the possible hygiene. That didn't matter, and this was not even accepted in Canada. Like Norplan was not contraceptive accepted in Canada, and he was generally doing it. And those that requested removal of the Norplan were systematically refused, even if they were asking, they were telling that they had side effects, certain things were not normal in their body or something, or they had infection after infection. Doesn't matter, he refused systematically. He went as far as those that were pregnant, enforced the abortion, and then he sent them, he had to send them south in Montreal for some reason, medical reason. But before he sent them south here, he had to make them sign a paper of no return to their village if they were not getting an abortion. So that was the tip of the iceberg. So we made complaint. As a nurse, we made complaint of this doctor, work he was doing, and the system. He was not taking care of the people that, when he would come in the village, was not taking care of the people that were in danger, sick, or even accident. He was just chasing for enforcement of contraceptive or abortion or the limitation of the growth of the population. So we made complaint, and we were told regularly that we didn't have any proof of that we were seeing, because anyway, no family had complained, the women have not complained, in with women. So we knew we had a problem of language. So what we did is that we worked with the women to write letters of the situation, to write the letters of all the complaints that they had about this doctor. This was done. Many letters were gathered. So what happened is that the government sent a lawyer for this doctor to go up north with his lawyer, and they set up a committee without any participation of Inuit people, only people that. White people, if we want. Nobody of the community were allowed on the committee. And it ended up that finally they received a letter, but the agreement was that the doctor will have to resign and everything would be clean for him. He can do whatever he wants as somewhere else. And the letter were all destroyed. All the letters that were right about the complaints were destroyed. So since then, because this was becoming a scandal, they decided to stop this aggressive and very clear way of reducing the population. But since then, this was in 1996, I think that was the last time, or 1997, I've been working there since then. This has never stopped. I mean, what it is, for example, the Depot Provera is one way that we tried, and we have to impose on the population, which means that every pregnant woman are continually harassed by phone or whatever to get Depot Provera. And as soon they get their baby, they have to come, and we have at the nursing station to reinforce the use of Depot Provera. They never know exactly what are the side effects, and there are no education about that. Also, the education in the school, I requested many times, and I said I wouldn't work in the school unless we discuss the real problems of suicide among young people, about sexually transmitted disease that are very common and are, in my view, even though there was no study, but to have worked on the health department there since 1994, 95, I must say that this is the major cause, it's probably the major cause of problems with health among the young people, and especially the newborn. They refuse to make a study on that, because that will mean work to help and to prevent and to make an advance on the health of the Inuit people, so they can have more babies, have babies, and healthy babies. But that they don't want to work on this issue. They refuse. Every time they send people to make education, they never use people like me, or people that have knowledge of the situation. They send people that never went up north in their own life, don't even know that Inuit exist, and they go there and they talk about problems of pregnancy among the youth, and Depot Provera, the solution. First of all, Depot Provera is not the solution for the sexually transmitted disease. It is not. And second, when I mentioned what are we going to do, I talked with my, what are you going to do if AIDS, HIV goes up north? They told me, then, like Africa, they will have a lesson of what it means when you screw around with different peoples and you drunk all the time. That's the kind of answer. So it's clear that the area is, for me, they are not interested to make the Inuit people a growing population and a healthy population, and also an educated population. Because if they were really interested by the education, I mean, it's obvious, it doesn't take a genius to realize when you are not addressing a population where the Inuktitut is only mostly the language that is spoken at home, when they live 10 and 20 people in the same home and there's one TV, everybody communicate with the same TV in Inuktitut, and that's the way they communicate on the TV, but with another community, then obviously Inuktitut is spoken at home all the time. So where do they have the chance to practice a second language and be able to learn to be a nurse, a doctor, a teacher, so that, and even to write their own history? We're trying to find people to write in Inuktitut their own history. So that's the situation. So when we talk about severe colonization, and when I mentioned this word up north, what I got as an answer is always, listen, it's a clash between modernization and old-fashioned. And when I said, but look at the disaster of your clash, the suicide rate is about 1 per month, succeeded rate of suicide. I said, how can you call about stop the clash? They said, there's too much resistance to live a proper life. I tell you the story of a little girl. She was 13 years old. She was pregnant. She didn't know she was pregnant. When we find out she was about at least five months pregnant, we found out because her belly was deformed. We sent her to Povognitok because we work in a nursing station. There's no doctor, so we sent her to Povognitok. This little girl find out she was pregnant through ultrasound that was done in Povognitok. But at the same time, they found out that this baby was totally deformed. So little girl, she was 13 years old, probably sexually abused. She was sent to children's hospital. And there, they find out the baby had all of his organ outside in the back. All of his abdominal organ was in the back, outside in a pouch. So when I phoned down, I was in Salawit at the time, this little girl came from Salawit. When I phoned down Saudi, I found out the reality. This little girl, we already had problems, like internal psychological problems with the little girl. 13 years old, the baby couldn't be viable, and this little girl would be traumatized to keep this baby. So in my mind, the idea was probably abortion. So I gathered the responsible in the community. That's the way I always work with the community. Never go through the people that have been decided by the government to govern the village, because they are buyout, they are sold out. So I never go by them. I always ask, I want the responsible, the prominent people in the community, the people that are respected in the community, and also the parents of the little girl. So we discuss very seriously, very about the situation of this little girl. The decision, especially from the mother that was was scared about her little girl, wanted her little girl back right away because she was only 13 years old and no help, where she was not getting any psychological support down south. She wanted a girl, and she all agreed, if, imagine those retarded people, agree with an abortion for the sake of the little girl. So we all thought that was totally reasonable, and for me it was reasonable, perfectly reasonable. When I phoned down south, the doctor decided to perform kind of an experimentation with this baby. So they decided to keep this little girl, 13 years old, pregnant till 28 weeks time. Keep south. And this little girl didn't speak at all other language than Inuktitut. And it was her first pregnancy. She barely knew she was pregnant, and we knew in Salawit that this little girl had already some psychological problems. Imagine, and they keep her for about 20 weeks up to 28 weeks till they decided, three doctors, after many insistence from the family and the community to bring this little girl back to Salawit and stop the intervention and stop the pregnancy, because this was not a viable pregnancy anyway, it would never be viable up north. So they said, no, we may have chance these days, and we will do it. They keep her, and the baby, they get the baby out at 28 weeks, and they perform three surgeries on this baby, and they send this little girl up after many months, few months in South, they sent her back to Salawit, and they performed three surgery on the baby for experimentation, and finally they declared the baby dead. This little girl came back. You imagine the anger we have. They call about modernization of our society. They call about modernization of Inuit society. When, on a practical ground, the family and the community found that the solution for the sake of this little girl was an abortion. And it was a therapeutic abortion. We're not talking about it was a therapeutic abortion. They refused. Et bien, this monsieur, these gentlemen that perform these things on this little girl without giving her any support, they should know, and they probably will never know, that this little girl, her brother and her sister, committed suicide in 2002. And they will never know that. They never get any support to this community for anything except experimentation, destruction, and they're continuing that under all kind of pretexts. But the major pretext of our colonization today is the clash between the modern and the civilized with the retarded, uncivilized people. That's the pretext. And every people from here that go up north, they are educated and they are told this way. What you would see up north, the destruction of this population, it's not our fault. It's because they resisted. They resisted our civilization and our modernization, and they don't know how to adapt. Just wait and see. And I've tried not to wait and see. Since 1995, they haven't stopped to stop me to talk and to work and to do my work properly. And from every village that we succeed, and we succeed to do something, a little bit of something, they kick me out. They kick me out and they make sure I will never get back. In Salawit, in 2003, they send the Canadian Army to recruit in the nursing station, use our nursing station to recruit the Inuit people. And apparently they're probably a solution to their suicide, and a solution also to their ignorance. And when I said, but they don't know what they're gonna do. They don't even know where you're gonna bring them. Why are they using them as the army? They said, don't worry. Obviously, these people will be used as simple soldiers because they have no education or instruction, so obviously they are not smart enough to be other things than what we call in French, chair à canon, for our army around the world. cannon fodder. That's it. So that's what they're going to do with them, because obviously they have no education. And apparently up north, we were told that by the army that they had a very high recruiting rate in the last April 2003, probably because the need of getting out of this situation that is very almost uncontrolling. Also in Salouet, they have been hiring, in the last year, they have been hiring a caporal to work as a cops, a police, is the head police of the police station in Salouet. This guy is a very, probably, I think if I remember, he's a guy that had history of in the army, but he's a very reactionary guy that tried to impose all kind of rules. And one of these was that enforcing, for example, when he sees kids fighting, because you should know that in 2000 they built up a rehab center in Salouet where it's kind of a jail for kids. They have no school, no community, not other things to do, but rehab center, no kind of a jail. When we don't know what to do with people, we build jails. I think the native people know that in north of Saskatchewan. I think when they started to, in the 1980s, when they built a lot of jails, prison, because that was a solution with the youth. This police, many times, this caporal, many times, at least one that I had to fight against, he would bring 12 and 13 years old kids that were fighting each other to force us nurses to give injection of antipsychotic to these kids. We systematically refused. I systematically refused at the time, and I was lucky because I had the support of another police that was an Inuk police that was very good and was sort of like silent socialist. No, and then we succeed. But, this police guy, he succeed lately because I got a letter to get rid of all, especially the nurses that were very combative or had a very good attitude towards the Inuit people, trying to prevent some of the way that they were trying, the way they wanted us to work. So now they got rid of most of us in that village because of that police that would come into our nursing station and threaten us to work in a certain way and wrote to the administration of health in down south about us not doing the work he was telling us to do. And he got support. Also, there is other situation that I've been witness maybe I mentioned before about the suicide things. Many times I've raised and with the Inuit people, like the community, trying to organize for suicide prevention and amongst the youth people. And one of the major counteract for the provincial government with the which is branch, northern branch of health services, it was in 2000. Yes, the summer 2003, following the suicidal of two young person in the same weekend, we gathered a few people in the community, about 12 people, even more, the community trying to organize the community against and prevention against suicide. And at the same time, they rushed up a few psychologists and then from the south to Salouet and to tell us that it would be dangerous for the community to start anything regarding the suicide, because we have no competence and we had to let the government do their job. That for the moment, it was not a priority. Suicide was not a priority. That has been the situation there. There's many other places, many other villages where Salouet, Akulivik, where I worked, Omiyuyak. From now on, I've been refused to go systematically, not only for the work I do, but for the work that I did with the community to resist And some of the work are being continued by the local people, friends that I don't want to name the work, but friends that are in those community, that are Inuk, especially Inuk women and men, that continue the work that has been started to stop, to resist as much as we can to what we call the phenomenon of colonization of this area.